Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
This is Mr. Michael Dean, broadcasting live and worldwide from you know where. And Nima's going to be on here very shortly. Nima is doing things, and I got tired of waiting. So I'm going to rock it out with my microphone out on the Freedom Fiends. And let's see, what's going on today? Well, I have to restate for the record that TrueCrypt is open source. I had said it was not in a recent episode. I was wrong. I sit corrected. And yeah, so we're rolling, Nima Vidati. Are we there?
Frank.
Yeah, Frank. So yeah, I mean, I've had a vague wondering before if this was happening, but it seemed far too conspiratorial of a theory to even discuss on the Fiends. That's a note I have, but I don't know what it was for.
I think you're probably talking about the justice laundering.
We're recording, man. Get on here.
Yeah. We're recording.
Yeah. I started without you. Yeah, I was talking about the justice laundering, and we already discussed that. We've already done that. Nima!
Yeah,
what's up? What are you doing?
Scott Horn had a guy from Reuters, I think, on today talking about the justice laundering. And it was pretty much just like we said, like, government doesn't want to stop. they're not going to let go of this. This is their thing, and they feel like it's not that big a deal, and get used to it. And it feels like the NSA is saying the same thing, too. Guys, get used to it. We're not going to stop. This is too much of a boon for us. This is how we roll now, so... Like it or get out, Merca.
There's actually something I read. I had bookmarked a while back. Maybe you know the phrase, and we could look it up and talk about it. It was kind of like mission creep, but it was legal creep. And it was basically. I don't think that was the term for it. I think there's a term for this thing, but we can call it legal creep if we want. It's basically the idea that whatever they can get away with widely becomes what's legal. You know,
the new normal.
Yeah.
I think one of those libertarian Mises Institute or maybe Independence Institute muckety mucks wrote a thing called Crisis and Leviathan.
Get up on the mic.
Crisis and Leviathan.
Yeah.
And he calls it the ratchet effect. Like there's a crisis and then they ratchet up the state's power and they never ratchet back, you know, just like a ratchet. You try to pull it back, it just goes click, 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 and it's still in the same position.
Well, you can actually release a ratchet, though, and you can't release... I don't know if ratchet effect's
the best
name for it.
Can't release the state, huh?
I think it's more like the herpes effect, because once you have it, you have it. Although, you don't get more of it with time.
Well, I like the ratchet effect, because it's almost got a new hip-hop crossover motif, because you say no to ratchet pussy, but Juicy J can't.
I don't know what ratchet pussy is.
You don't know what that is.
What is it?
People theorize that it's, I guess, a malapropism of wretched, but nasty hoes, they is ratchet pussy. And Juicy J likes to rap about being in the strip club and fucking that ratchet pussy. He says, you say no to it, but I can't.
And any program directors that are just tuning into this podcast, please go back and listen to the disclaimer at the beginning. This is our non-radio midweek, no holes barred podcast.
You almost said all balls out.
I like that. I like that. Instead of like, you know, all in, like the poker term, like, I'm committed 100%. All balls out. I'm going to whip all out three of my testicles and put them on the table and dare you to poke them with a stick.
There you go.
Well, this is very fitting. You know why? You know what's special about today, Nima?
No.
And it's also the name of today's episode. It is Freedom Fiends episode 250.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
How did that happen, man?
Time flies, yeah.
I think we should call it Freedom Fiends episode 250, not droned yet.
Not droned yet, exactly. Seems like just yesterday we were inventing the concept and talking to each other through our condenser mics with lots of headphone leakage and echo.
Yeah.
And being like, what do you think about that? Let's talk about that. Say stuff about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We've come a long way, I guess.
I think we have. Yeah. Ben Stone said that Lou Rockwell is the Charles Emerson Winchester III of Liberty.
I don't know what that is.
Really? I thought even you would know what that is.
I mean, okay, I get the point. It sounds like some old, rich, East Coast Republican establishment kind of guy.
You know, it's kind of funny.
Somebody plays polo and...
Keep going. You're 100 for 100 so far, man.
All right. Eats abalone sandwiches and complains when the waiter gives him a bologna sandwich. I said abalone. Like that?
Keep going, man. What would be his, let's see, race... religion and ethnic background in
WASP,
an acronym. Yes.
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 Very, very WASPish. And I thought Lou Rockwell was a Catholic.
Maybe, but you're just nailing it so hard. I guess you could tell from the name.
The name.
Which is kind of funny because my band Bomb on one of our records put all four of our full names, and with the exception of, well, actually, all of us kind of. Somebody said, "Is this a band or a yacht club?" Because it was Anthony Michael Short, yeah. Michael Wareham Dean, Douglas Arthur Hilsinger, and J. Morgan Crawford. It was like, it sounded like the law firm of Wee Cheatham and Snortington.
Yes, yes. You guys could have called yourself the Wasp Nest.
Yeah, although. Yeah, we weren't all WASPs. We just kind of had WASPy names. Tony was a Catholic.
WASPy names.
Tony. Okay. Tony's a Catholic. He was an Irish Filipino.
What was his last name?
Italian Filipino. His name was Short.
Oh, okay.
Fag.
That's not what he went by, though.
Went by Tony Fag. But on one Tony record, Fag. We put all of our real names, full names, yeah. But Charles Emerson Winchester III is a character on MASH. On the TV show MASH. He's a doctor. Okay. He's one of the doctors, and he was drafted, a lot of people were drafted in the Korean War, and he was like the high society, private physician from Boston.
Did people like that really get drafted, though?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah, especially if they, probably doctors especially,
because they needed them.
The grunts could probably get out of it if daddy knew a senator or something, but doctors were in short supply.
Yeah.
Probably doctors and engineers probably could not get out of it.
Right.
Huh. Yeah,
but I guess they made sure to pitch to them that they'd be well protected. You'll be behind, well behind the front, just taking care of.
I don't know, man, because the MASH is Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, and they're generally 500 yards behind the line where the fighting is, because they need to be able to get people who are grievously injured to the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital very quickly.
No, I never really watched MASH. That was usually my signal growing up that I had watched too much TV MASH is on. Okay. That means there will be no other good TV after this point.
So it was your Johnny Carson. It was like Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show to old people.
Ah, I guess. Yeah, yeah. It signaled that it was time to go to bed. Yeah, exactly. I kind of get the sense that it was supposed to be kind of anti-war, though, huh?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was anti-war and kind of pro-liberal, but there's still not a lot I could argue in it, really. I mean, it was like the back then, what made a Democrat was good, or what made a Democrat voter or a liberal voter, except for wanting to steal a bunch of money to do it, and even like the Republican WASP in there, Charles Winchester Emerson Winchester III, who was considered by everyone in the show and the viewers to be like a brutish bore. Actually, occasionally the writers would have him doing something really charitable and hiding it, giving his gold watch to the priest to sell to buy shoes for the orphans at the orphanage in town. Things like that.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So why is Lou Rockwell like him?
Just because
that
man.
Was the most ubiquitous WASP.
Because you'd have to ask Ben Quaker. I think it's because Ben thinks that Lou Rockwell's opinion on, and he's done great work and he's a great thinker of the ages.
Yeah.
And, but I kind of agree with Ben's assessment that maybe Lou kind of looks at a lot of the young bucks of liberty kind of like Charles Emerson Winchester III in MASH looked at all the other people he was forced to be around in this MASH unit. You know, kind of like, you don't have the right breeding. I've never heard of you. I don't know. Your family doesn't know my family. I won't blog your movie. Oh.
Are there some resentments? Do we need to go over your resentment list, Michael?
Yeah. Yeah. We should have an episode just at some point where I just do another fifth step. Audience.
I thought that was our episode.
No. The microphone is our therapist, not our sponsor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. My fifth step, my fourth step was so, it was insanely detailed. I had like 750 resentments, all people. And it was like, you know, it was going back so far. Like, and Susie, who called me a name in kindergarten, you know, like people who, like, if I encountered them now and said, you know, do you remember when you called me a name in kindergarten? They'd be like, I don't know who you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Michael has a very... do you hold grudges? Do you think you do? I kind of feel like you do.
That's funny.
Am I gonna psychoanalyze you here? Are we getting into Stefan Molyneux territory?
Well, I don't know, because you know more about me than a lot of people do, and you've seen me at my best and my worst. I would say that it is I agree with the AA. I'm no longer a member of AA, but AA helped me a lot. I was active in it for a long time, and I still practice the principles as best I can in my life. And I think that, and I'm still sober. And I think that, one of the great truths in AA is that, resentments are something that non-alcoholics, or as AA calls them, normal men can indulge, but that the alcoholic will be ruined by them. You know, a normal person, if someone cuts him off in traffic and flips him off, you know, the normal person kind of fumes about it. They get to their office finally and they tell a few people at the office about it. And by the coffee break, they've forgotten about it. An alcoholic gets cut off and flipped off by someone in traffic and like pulls over, writes down their license number, looks them up, finds out where they live, goes and watches them every night in a row for 18 nights, finds out what's valuable and wonderful to them, and then figures out how they can destroy that and take it away. And to AA and, you know, what it's done for me, I don't have to do that anymore.
You don't really do that anymore.
I still probably kind of take things a little further than people need to. I mean, my wife said I take things to apocalypse sometimes, which doesn't mean you have to walk on eggshells around me. And it doesn't mean I'm insane, but it does mean that, you know, if I say to my wife, you know, let's do this. And she's like, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, her reason for not wanting to do that or see that movie or go to that place or do whatever, you know, might be because she has something else to do or because she's seen that movie or because she doesn't like that director or something. And to me, you know, I tend to go to like, what? Don't you love me? You know, or like, am I a bad person because I thought of this idea? You know, I don't know. That's an extreme exaggeration, but sometimes I do tend to do that. And you know that. You could give examples of times I've done that with you.
I won't, but I could.
Well, I could. I could give examples. Like, you know, sometimes if I ask you to do something and you don't do it, I sit there and brood while I'm doing it instead and be like, Nima fucking hates me and he doesn't take this seriously. And then I find out that, like, you were actually doing it or you just didn't have time to do it and had sent me an email and it had gone into my trash folder or something. I didn't know you did it or whatever. You know, I take things really personally sometimes. And I probably shouldn't be admitting this in public because these days they could say, oh, that means you're crazy and you need to be put away in a padded room where they do nothing but broadcast 24/7 speeches by Cass Sunstein until you're re-educated.
Yeah, that makes me wonder, what do they want out of us? I mean, what do they really want? Do they want everybody to just keep their mouth shut and never be honest?
I touched on it on a recent episode. I said, you know, if they really were as efficient as the conspiracy theorists think they are, you know, the powers that be would have us all living in a box working on a treadmill.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Work. Keep your mouth shut. Enjoy the provided entertainment. go to work again, keep your mouth shut, enjoy the provided entertainment.
I mean, the hippies kind of got it right, and so did the punk rockers to an extent in their critiques. They just didn't understand the non-aggression principle necessarily. Of like, the hippies were like, right. You know, Jimi Hendrix has a line in his song. It's like, hey, Mr. Businessman, you know, you want to be free. Let me look up the lyrics to that. I mean, I can't even remember it, but it's, you know, flag, plastic flag, something, blah, 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 blah. You know, all the like, basically the hippies thought, what I don't want to do is be like the establishment. And what the establishment is a war machine where men in suits tell us what's right for us and tell us what we can do and tell us that smoking pot should put us in a cage, even though we know it's not bad for us from personal experience. And all they want us to do is go to boring, you know, movies and watch boring TV that never tells any truth. And that's one reason that music was always so popular, other than that it moves people, is music has always had a lot more of an edge than like movies and television, I think, and radio until recently, than talk radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think people had a lot more freedom of expression. I mean, that's where the big battle over explicit lyrics was in music.
You know why it always had more it was more real than other forms of media? Because first of all, like, anybody can do it. Anybody can play music. Whereas, like, back then, to be a filmmaker or a radio broadcaster, you needed a corporation behind you.
You needed a lot of money.
Yeah.
But anybody can buy a guitar and a four-track recorder.
But back then, to become popular, you still needed a corporation behind you. But the thing was, the people who made decisions, the people in decision-making capacity at major labels back then, didn't have a fucking clue what the kids wanted.
Right.
They didn't understand. They couldn't even understand the lyrics. So, like, they would just sign stuff, and if it took off and blew up, they'd be like, cool, all right, we're making money.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know,
it was a fishing net approach.
Whereas a movie, you can see whether it offends you or not. And, you know, talk radio, you can hear what they're saying. But they just didn't understand music, man. So they were like, well, if we could sell it, we'll sell it. We don't care what it is.
Yeah. Well, to the benefit of lots of people, I would assume. The consumers of the music who got to enjoy all the good stuff that came out of that.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Right. Yeah, okay, here we go. If Six Were Nine by Jimi Hendrix has this line. White-collared conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic fingers at me. They're hoping soon my kind will drop and die, but I'm going to wave my freak flag high. Fall, mountain, fall, just don't fall on me. Hey, Mr. Businessman, why ain't you dressed like me? I'm the one who's got to die when it's time for me to die, so let me live my life the way I want to. That's fucking gave me chills, man. It's so powerful. But that kind of sums up the whole hippie thing of like us versus them and their starched, conservative, you know, blow-dried, produced, not wild and crazy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, that's why should how somebody looks or what they do for a living really have any bearing on it? I feel like they're false distinctions.
Well, it actually, it used to be a lot more important. I mean, it's always been important if people were stylish, but what's stylish now? Like, for instance, for young men in the 60s, if anybody dressed with the haircut that is popular now, that a lot of people have now, walked up to some hippies and said, hey, man, got any weed? The hippies would be like, get away, you fucking narc. You know, because like short hair is cool now.
Narc hair. Yeah.
You know, like back then, if you looked like most young men have their hair now and you went up to some people and tried to buy some weed back then, the only way they'd sell it to you is if you like could show them a draft card and say, I just got back from Vietnam or something, you know?
Yeah. I have this hair for a reason.
Yeah.
The government cut my hair. Government stole my hair.
Well, that's what a freak flag is. When Jimi Hendrix says, I want to wave my freak flag high. That's
talking about his hair?
Long hair.
His dreads?
Yeah. Or he didn't have dreads. Ah. He had an afro. But yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay.
That's racist.
Well, why is that racist?
He thought he had dreads because he's a black rocker.
Well, he had an afro. He had. Okay, I guess
it's very
racist.
Different. It means he combs his hair. Dreads means you don't.
Mm, okay. Okay. Well, nowadays young black people have dreads and afros.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah.
Both. Yeah.
Any young black person that has dreads probably listens to Jimi Hendrix now.
I don't think so, man. It's a pretty in hip hop thing too. I mean, Waka Flocka has dreads.
I'll bet
of street to have dreads now.
I'll bet a lot of young rappers know who Hendrix is and have respect for him.
Probably.
How could you not, man?
2 Chainz has dreads. I don't know if he's into Jimi Hendrix though, because he's kind of lame.
Don't people sample Hendrix? Maybe not. They just sampled John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, huh? For the beat.
I don't know. That's a good question. I can't think of anybody who sampled Hendrix, but I think there's a good website that'll show you who sampled who. I think it's called Who Sampled Who.
Who Sampled Whom, it should be. I saw something really funny the other day. It was on the Ron Paul. What's the big Ron Paul site called?
Which one? The new one?
The one that's been around for a few years. RonPaul.com, is that it? No.
No, there's the Daily Paul is one big
that's
one.
That's it.
Yeah, Daily Paul, and then there's Campaign for Liberty, which was what his 2008 campaign turned into. It was Campaign for Liberty, yes, which was a big step on my way to anarchy.
Okay, here's the big ugly typo. It's in a headline on the Daily Paul, and it says, "Yes, I shall gloat. The editor of New York newspaper, comma, whom unethically released names and addresses of lawful gun owners, comma, fired." Mm. And it's like, whom? Here's the thing. If you misuse whom in that direct, if you say who when you mean whom, people generally kind of give you a pass. But if you say whom when you should say who, people think you're trying to be smart and being fucking dumb while you're doing it.
Yeah, and doing it wrong. Yeah. That's why I tend to just avoid whom in general.
It's actually, I mean, there's a lot of belief among ethnolinguists, and this is one of the times I really kind of agree with them, is that whom should just go away, and who can work for both of them. You know, it's very Charles Emerson Winchester III to properly use the word whom every time it comes up in conversation.
Whom. Yeah. Say it in your white people voice. I really liked your white people voice.
Yes, I shall gloat. The editor.
No,
wait,
that's not it.
Not my nerdy one. My waspy one? My Long Island lockjaw one.
That's it. Yeah.
And this article's actually about someone getting fired in Long Island, so. Yes, I shall gloat. The editor of New York newspaper, whom unethically released names and addresses of lawful gun owners, was fired.
There you go.
It wasn't a great sentence for it, though. It should actually be something a little waspier than that.
Yeah. Let's see. The only person I see here on whosampled.com that sampled Jimi Hendrix is the Beastie Boys.
Ah, of course.
For a song called Jimmy James.
That's funny.
Let's see. I think. Let me look it up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let's play it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Foxy Lady.
They also sampled James Brown.
Yeah! The funky drummer?
No. Maybe. No, the.
Yeah! Oh, I thought you were talking about where the drum loop came from.
This probably is James Brown's drummer. Okay, that's enough of that. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot
dead.
Of people.
I thought we were going to let him rap for a
little
bit.
Well, there's actually, you know, there's a documentary about sampling. That has a huge section about James Brown's drummer, who is the most sampled drummer ever.
Yeah. Well, a specific song, right? Funky Drummer?
Yeah. Let's find that. Here's the Led Zeppelin drum beat that's the most sampled Led Zeppelin drum beat in hip-hop. And it's just those two bars before the harmonica comes in, man. Mm-hmm. Probably because it's like the most solid four beats of drumming that's ever been recorded, I think. Let's hear it again. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let me play the funky drummer break.
Yeah.
It doesn't have. I thought it would have just a clip of the actual break. We're not going to listen to the whole funky drummer song. Screw that. That's it. That's it.
Clyde Stubblefield.
Yeah. The drummer's name is Clyde Stubblefield. The unfortunately Clyde Stubblefield. Named Clyde Stubblefield.
It's kind of a great name.
It is a great name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James Brown, you were telling me something really interesting about James Brown and Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix played with Jimi Hendrix played in James Brown's band before Jimi Hendrix was famous. And got fired.
That kind of blew my mind when you said that, but it blew my mind even more what happened and why he didn't, why we don't think of him as James Brown's guitar player.
Yeah. Because he got fired for being for dressing too flamboyantly. James Brown is like, I'm the one that does that in this band.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
It was crab mentality. He didn't, James Brown was at the top of the bucket and he didn't want Jimi Hendrix to climb out.
Yeah. Whereas in the other band from that era, the other funky band from that era where everyone tried to outdo each other was Parliament Funkadelic, and I'd much rather listen to them than James Brown.
I kind of would too. I feel like they're a lot more dynamic. Like
Jimi Hendrix would have been fired from Parliament Funkadelic for not being flamboyant enough.
Yeah, man, you still playing your guitar like that? We on some new shit now.
Nah, actually not. Their guitar player Blackbird totally was influenced and trying to be Jimi Hendrix. He played in the Red Hot Chili Peppers for like one tour after John Frusciante died. Not John Frusciante, the old guy, Hillel Slovak, after he died of a heroin overdose. They got Blackbird from and he played like one tour with them, and he really just didn't gel musically, which is kind of surprising because the Chili Peppers totally are heavily influenced by his old band, yeah. Parliament Funkadelic, but they just didn't mesh his musicians very well, and they fired him. They like really respectfully fired him because they still just had mad respect for him. Like, you know, let him down really easy, gave him a bunch of money as a severance for like, you know, nine weeks work or something. And according to Anthony Kiedis's autobiography, Scar Tissue, which is a really good book, and it's co-written by some great ghostwriter whose name is also on the cover with Kiedis, who made it a book. I don't know if Kiedis could even write a book, but he
he can say things that are probably good stories.
Yeah, books like that are usually written by, like, you know, they hire the ghostwriter. Sometimes their name's on it, sometimes it isn't, but they just sit down and like interview them and record it for a couple weeks and hang out with them and meet all their friends and look through
and
all their pictures.
And then squeeze it into book format.
And then put it into book format. But that book is a really good read. And in there, Anthony Kiedis says that Blackbird, after they fired Blackbird, Blackbird kept calling him up and leaving messages on Kiedis's answering machine, basically saying, I'm going to burn down your house and kill everyone close to you.
What?
Yeah. He was really he was like, yeah, this is, I'm finally going to get my due, you know?
Huh. That's disappointing, man.
Yep.
Why?
Yep.
Why? I mean, if you don't jive, you don't jive, right?
Right.
Relax.
Right. I know, man.
I found a Blackbird McKnight guitar envelope filter solo. Envelope filters are popular.
Well, we were
again,
talking
so
about how, like, you know, we were talking about how Jimi Hendrix was, we think that Pink Floyd was influenced by Jimi Hendrix or, you know, around the same time. They were concurrent. But then Pink Floyd became a lot more popular in the long run, and first of all, by not dying, but secondly, by being a lot more kind of processed and pop and acceptable and not as like jarring to the ears, even though they're really weird. But they used a lot of the studio techniques that were originally invented by Les Paul, but really taken to the psychedelic level by Jimi Hendrix in his short 3-year career. And then Pink Floyd kind of took them and made them less jarring and more like, ah, I want to stay here forever in this place that Pink Floyd brings me. Yeah.
Right, right. They turned it from rushing rapids to a peaceful, soothing, slow-moving river.
Yes. Kind of a thing. Yeah, like sort of like being on a big hit of heroin with a tiny, tiny dollop of mescaline in it.
Okay, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, I guess I was just – I'm amazed at how some of these – things came about, these recording techniques, that you actually used to have to like create them and think of them. And I guess you still can by combining different things and doing – people can still be creative in the studio. But there's so much now that you just click a button, turn a knob, move something up and down in software. And I guess that's creative too. You know, it's just amazing that I'm glad that that human knowledge sort of moves like this. Like there are pioneers and then people can build off it. And that's sort of one of the awesome things that's unique to humanity is that's why we progress and keep progressing, is because somebody does something really cool and it's really unique and avant-garde. And then in 10 years, it's routine and everybody does it. So yeah, those new people can build on that and they can create something new and avant-garde. And then 10 years, that's routine. And we just keep building it.
Yeah.
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 Worms, worms. Blackbird McKnight.
Yeah, you know, I think somebody
I think somebody is... Oh, you gonna play some? Oh, you gonna play some?
I think I was.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead, man. On that
bass player?
No, other guitar player.
I can't tell. I don't know who that is.
Find Maggot Brain. Find Maggot Brain.
Maggot Brain?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I definitely hear him trying to be Jimi Hendrix there.
Yeah. Well, my friend Eric McFadden, who played in my band Slish and is also in my DIY or Die movie, was in Parliament Funkadelic for a while, a few years back.
Oh, nice.
So if that's recent, if there's another younger black dude playing
Funkadelic,
guitar.
Funkadelic, Maggot Brain, Eddie Hazel, yeah. Michael Hampton.
Oh, that's Eddie Hazel. That's not, play Maggot Brain though, man. That's amazing. It's the most Hendrix-y. It's more Hendrix-y than Hendrix.
Okay, Maggot Brain is the song?
Yeah.
The album?
Okay. Yeah, it's a song.
Maggot Brain.
It's an instrumental.
Let's play Maggot Brain. Yeah. That sounds really awesome. Wow, it's like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, just jump into the middle of it.
Jump into the middle of it.
Okay.
It's very Pink Floyd.
It's very Pink Floyd.
Or Pink Floyd is Pink very, this, is kind very
this kind of Hendrix-y.
Yeah.
God, it sounds chill. It sounds
chill, man.
Chills, man.
I assume there's drums in there at some point.
Jump ahead a little
jump
bit.
Ahead a little
I don't
bit.
Think there is.
I don't okay. think there is.
Doesn't
no?
need it. Doesn't need it.
And it's the same four
it's the
chords,
same four
over,
chords
and over.
Over and over. Jump ahead, a few
jump ahead a few minutes.
Yeah.
It's it building to something
it
there.
It does. It does.
Jump to what it
jump
builds
to. What it builds to. We're just going to play extra.
Play extra.
Okay.
It reminds me of, I think that's where Outkast's Bad Note came from.
Here, let me play something.
Okay.
This is me and Eric McFadden from DIY or Die.
Take my echo off, please.
All right.
This is us playing Maggot Brain with me playing acoustic guitar and him playing mandolin in his backyard garden. It's in the DIY or Die movie. It's pretty cool.
Just do it regardless. Quit your job, run away, join the circus, be a musician, and live on the street. Oh, shit, that's right. This is a mandolin. can't use that part. I hit a wrong note. Because a lot of people...
I can't use that part. I hit a wrong note. Yeah.
A bad note is not a bad note if it's a good note.
That's and what a weed says. A weed is only a flower in the wrong place. We're going to go to the market and come back with more of episode 250 of the Freedom Fiends, taking it easy here.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to 1868. That was Maggot Brain with Eric McFadden and Michael Dean.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
Whoa.
I didn't record that. It's okay. You know what, Nia? Something just hit me. I'm sure that people come up with this before, but I've never heard it, and it just hit me.
Okay.
The war on drugs is basically saying God is wrong, we're right. How can you fucking outlaw a plant?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even talking about like using it or smoking it or selling it, but just having it growing on your property, they can arrest you. Like basically saying this thing that God made is wrong and we must stamp it out.
Yeah.
That's denaturing it, man.
Yeah, we've said that. Yeah. I think Bill Hicks has a whole thing about that. Yeah. He's got a whole bit about it, man.
Okay.
That's just the thing. But that's what the state always does, is they take something that's natural and say, nope. We decide. We've eaten from the tree of knowledge of the fruit of good and evil, or whatever it says there in the Bible.
Yeah.
We decide. We are now the lawmakers. We say what's right and what's wrong. God doesn't say that anymore. That's all us.
I know. It's so square.
It's so square. Yeah. And, you are right. You are hearing some room echo. I was rearranging my room, and I didn't put my sound conditioning back up. So,
well, let's reboot for Teaching Hospital.
I'm gonna reboot?
Let's reboot while we're doing the show. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Rebooting compass, audio compass, rebooting. Yeah.
Welcome to episode 250 of the Freedom Fiends. I'm looking at the article about Clyde Stubblefield here. Born in 1943 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, Clyde Stubblefield is a drummer best known for his work with James Brown. What's up, man?
Hey. Yeah. You want me to hang some things up on my walls?
Yeah, let's do that again. So wait, why did you take stuff down? You had it perfect, man. We did an article about it.
Because I'm not going to have my room be crappy forever. I've got to like put stuff in places, you know?
But you put the things in places. You don't take the stuff down and just leave it for days. You should take the stuff down and put up better stuff.
Well, usually we do the cast on Wednesday, but today you were like, let's do the cast now. And I was like, okay.
Well, because I got company tomorrow.
Yeah, and I have no money to buy better stuff, so it's going to have to be blankets again.
That's all right. So you take them down between shows?
No, but it was covering a bookcase that I'm using to organize all my music gear, and so I'm not going to sit there and pick the blanket up and hide under the blanket in my blanket fort while I organize my music gear.
Well,
so I took it down.
You could, man. If you know, really, I mean, it depends on what your priorities are.
I see.
I mean, I think even the one guest appearance that Amanda Billy Rock, she went in the closet to podcast
with
us.
She did. Yeah, she was passionate. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Well, I didn't take down the most important part, which is the one behind the microphone. Here, I didn't even hear myself. Let me hear myself. Check. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely not as bad as it could be, but it could definitely be better. Let me put some stuff up.
Amanda Billy Rock has still not has not publicized the episode she did with us. She did right before she went on. She's like, hey, in 5 minutes, I'm going to be on the Freedom Fiends. And then she didn't afterwards. Maybe she didn't have fun. But I wrote her and asked her to put it up. I don't know. I just think, you know, when you do an interview with somebody, it's not like there's a social contract. She doesn't owe us publicizing it, but, you know, that's, it's all about spreading audience to new audience. You know, we introduced the Fiends, our Fiend fans to her, and hopefully she would, introduce her fans to the Fiends. I mean, she came on here and talked and it was good. And yeah, I'm stalling for time while Nima does the teaching hospital thing. Yeah, on the Freedom Fiends. It's episode 250, man. And if you don't, y'all don't like it, you can have your money back. You can just get your money back here. Let me search. Amanda Billy Rock. Amanda Billy Rock. It's not on her Facebook yet. She has posted a lot of things since then. And Fiends. Yeah, she's not posted. Not posted the archive on her stuff to her many followers. That's interesting. All right. Well, all right.
It's the Freedom Motherfucking Fiend.
Yeah, you're getting better at singing. Yeah. Did you know that, Nima? You're getting a little better at singing. Uh-huh. I used your singing in our new demo. Well, if Nima's gonna spend a bunch of time, I was gonna play our new 4-minute demo while you did that.
Oh, I'm done. I'm done.
All right.
It took less than 3 minutes, like the blog post said. Does that sound better?
Berka. Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Berka. Berka.
Berka. You know, bear cat.
Casper has a bear cat and has had one for years, right?
That's lame. I don't remember. They didn't get it when I was there, but I think they might have soon after.
Yeah, because I saw a picture of it because they did. I'm pretty sure there was a thing we talked about a year ago on here where there was an armed standoff in a hotel here and somebody shot somebody and there was a hostage situation. And I'm like, if it weren't for the war on drugs, none of that would have happened. You know, it was basically there were some people doing meth in a motel on the wrong side of the tracks in Felony Flats, as they call it. And the police had a warrant on one of them and the guy just didn't want to go to jail that day, I guess, and he didn't come out. And they called it a hostage situation, and they rolled out the bear cat. They always just roll it out and just park it, and you know, usually
it's comfy.
Enough.
I bet, man. Yeah. I bet it's comfy in there. Yeah.
With a bump.
I've been in one. It's not really comfy. I don't know why they like it. I think it just makes them feel like big, strong men. Mm-hmm. It goes well with their outfits. They feel like, yeah, America.
Well, it scares the hell out of you, too, as the recipient of the bear cat.
It's the psychological warfare. Yeah.
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 Yeah, there's a MASH that's kind of like that. You know, the MASH is the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. They have sidearms and stuff, but I don't even know if they have rifles. They're just, you know, they're just there. And there's one day where they're getting shelled by the North Koreans and they're like, you know, they're trying to get help to come in and they can't get help. They can't get helicopter backup. They can't get anything. And finally, what they send is they send a tank and they just park the tank in the middle of the, you know, the hospital tents. And they quit getting shelled. Like people go, oh, that thing can hurt us. Okay, let's get out of here.
There you go. Yeah, there could be something to that.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, if you're barricaded in a house and you have a rifle and you have a standoff with the cops, you feel like you may have some advantage, or like you know they don't have the full advantage. But once a bear cat comes. If you know what a bear cat is, you know they can just stick an arm through the wall of whatever building you're in and gas you.
Or knock down the building you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you also know there could be a dozen guys in there all pointing their 30 caliber rifles out of holes.
Yeah.
And a guy on top with, you know, protection pointing a 50 caliber gun at you. And yeah, that's not – you know you definitely don't have the advantage at that point.
What do they have in mind that they need those things, man?
I think it's just the basics of libido dominante. I don't think it's any deeper than that. I think they have in mind what the state has always had in mind. It's just controlling people. I think they just feel they can get away with it more than ever now because there's been so much crisis and because they're already so far along that road. And they realize that who's going to stop them, right? They are Walt. The state is Walt in – in Breaking Bad, you know, at you kill one person in season one, and every season you're just killing more and more people, and it affects you less and less, and in the end you don't even feel guilty about it anymore. That's just what you have to do to keep your position.
Did you see the new season? Did you finish the last season?
I've finished. Well, is it a new season? I thought it was like the second half of season five that's coming out. Yeah, I watched the first episode of that. I was complaining in the radio show about how there should be a quick and easy way, and you know there is. I just thought there should be a quicker, easier way, but I was able to watch it.
And your 4-year-old brother told you how to do it.
No, I know how to do it.
We can't discuss that.
Usually, when I do that, I get a whole. I wait for the whole season so I can sit there and watch it all in a chunk. But it's too good of a show to wait, you know, months.
Yeah,
for
they're
that
really
to happen.
And they're really milking this last one with like the old method, the old model of media of like be there Sunday night at 8 p.m. And I mean to the point of like having crossovers with, you know, I watched the they had a Mythbusters, like busting the myths of testing myths. And the thing was they
did they cook meth with methylamine primer and discover if it's really blue?
They didn't do it. They didn't do anything fun. They didn't do that. And they didn't test the magnet thing, which I really wanted them to. But I was thinking, I'll bet the NSA and all local police departments would be really upset if they actually demonstrated that you can erase you know, through 3 feet of concrete with a giant magnet in a panel truck.
If they are going to do those amazing things, what lame stuff did they do?
Try to dissolve a body with hydrofluoric acid and tried to...
How did they got their hands on a body to do that?
And tried to blow up a room by throwing mercury fulminate on the floor.
Were they able to do either of those things?
No, they busted both of them. Well, here's what it was. Both of them would be doable a little bit different than they did it, but both of them would kill everyone in the room. The mercury fulminate thing, he had about 50 grams of it, and they built a throwing arm to throw it while they're not in the room. They actually even they built a little room out in the desert, and kind of like they had a dummy that looked like Tuco, and they put like a big blingy dollar sign around his neck, which he did not have. And they had him sitting in front of a desk that had a Rolodex on it that was open to a page that had like Heisenberg and then a 505-555 phone number. But it was pretty funny. And then they had a dummy head that looked like Walt with Walt's hat and glasses on top of the throwing arm that they built.
Nice.
And they threw 50 grams of it, which is about what he threw, and it made a big boom, but it didn't even blow out the windows. And then they used 10 times that much, and it basically did the same thing to that room that it did. It blew out the windows and blew everything away in the room. But they also had these sensors. They're kind of interesting. They're basically body damage sensors, and they showed that everyone in the room would have been killed.
Was Walt in the I don't remember.
No.
Was Walt in the room when that happened? No.
Okay. Yeah, he was the one throwing it. He was in Tuco's drug crib on the third floor.
So the myth busted. Walt would have died as well, not just Tuco.
Yeah. Okay. And the hydrofluoric acid, what they use for a body double for humans on that show is a pig. And it's it's about the same weight and size and, it's flesh and bone. So it's
much tastier, though.
I think it's a good thing to try. You know, if you can do it with a pig, you can do it with a human. So they poured hydrofluoric acid into a ceramic lined stainless steel bathtub like was in that show. They poured 2 gallons of it on the pig. It basically just stained the bathtub. It didn't dissolve anything, not the pig or the bathtub. Then they tried different in the lab. They used like tiny samples of different things that bathtubs are made of, you know, like porcelain, ceramic, stainless steel, and fiberglass, and hydrofluoric acid didn't dissolve any of them. And then they tried a different substance, which for legal reasons they couldn't say what it was. It was sulfuric acid and a quote-unquote special sauce that's mostly hydrogen and oxygen, as they said it. And
so it's hydrogen peroxide?
I didn't say it, man. I didn't say it.
Okay.
But that seems to be what people say it is on the internet. And there is a substance that's a mixture of sulfuric acid and strong hydrogen peroxide, which is commonly known as piranha sauce because it can dissolve flesh.
Oh, wow.
And that dissolved the pig to a slurry and dissolved the fiberglass tub. It would not dissolve a steel ceramic tub. But it totally did what's done in that movie, but it took more than 2 gallons, and it produced so much toxic fume, it would have killed everybody in the house. So,
wow.
Myth busted again. Piranha sauce, man. Yeah.
I like it. Dramatized. I mean, Walt would be smart enough to figure out the right ratio of the stuff to blow up to go and not hurt himself. And maybe they just edited it out when Walt poured the amount.
Basically, they had
sauce.
It wasn't Walt; it was Jesse. And it was Walt. No, it was Jesse because Jesse did it in the tub, which Walt told him not to, and that's why it dissolved through the tub. You know.
Well, don't they do that a few times? Like later on in season 5, they do it with a little kid.
It becomes an industrial process. No, they do it a bunch of times.
For them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it becomes a routine for them.
They do it in the underground lab in Chicken Man's lab under the laundry.
Mm-hmm.
When Chicken Man knifes that guy's throat to make a point in front of our heroes, they do it, and then Jesse says something like, "So is that what we do now? We cook meth and kill people and dissolve their bodies? Is that our job description or something?"
Apparently,
like that.
Yeah. Walt's really not our hero anymore, though, man.
Speak for yourself, man.
Is he still your hero? How could somebody be your hero that killed 9 people in 2 minutes? Like the way those people got shanked, like the blood spurting, that was just brutal, like in the truest sense of the word.
Yes. And Walt's home in his nice apartment looking at his very expensive
watch
that Jesse gave him for his birthday.
Making sure that every last drop of blood he wants spilt gets spilt.
You know, when I'm getting a little echo.
Mm-hmm.
Your headphones leaking, your long dreadlocks are letting the hair out. Letting the air out.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Fix it.
Buy my buck.
I don't know. Talk. It should be fixed.
I'm totally hearing some echo, man. Let me see. Hello. It's, I think it's better.
Okay.
What'd you do? What'd you fix?
Nothing. I'm farther away from the mic, I guess.
It's the placebo effect.
Yeah.
We're talking about Walt, Jesse, and heroes, right? Yeah.
What? I was saying, how can you still call Walt your hero or the hero? Walt is obviously no longer the hero. He has ceased to be a hero.
Yeah, I just thought of something. If can you picture when Jesse was in like 11th grade in, failing Walt's science class in the back of the room, like probably doodling pictures of his band that he's trying to start with Badger on his notebook and ignoring Walt?
Probably.
If you'd sat down next, if you talked to Jesse after class right then and said, in 3 years, you're going to buy Walt a Rolex watch for his birthday. Jesse would have been like, what are you smoking, man? Fuck that guy. If I had a Rolex, I'd be wearing it myself, motherfucker. Truth. Church, bitch.
Yeah. But now Jesse is still like, fuck that guy. He doesn't want to keep the money. He just throwing it at everybody.
I know. I liked his paper route after the homeless guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He didn't know what to do with
it. It's like landing in like cacti and down sewer drains. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. That'd be a good morning. Yeah. Or a good night.
Come out and find $20,000, band it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a stack just lay on your lap.
I think those are $5,000. I think it's $50, $100
five stacks.
Bills. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably a mix because when they're all on the pallet, they don't know. She doesn't know because there's all different denominations.
Yeah.
But I guess the punchline though is at the end there. The giant bowling ball sized testicles of Walt when he tells the head of the DEA in that area, you should tread lightly. That was so dope.
Yeah.
In that sense, he is a monster, but it's still so you can't help but watch it and go, yeah, tell that to the DEA guy, even though he's so horrible.
It's like a car crash meets a train robbery or something.
Exactly. Yes, that is the whole show. Or not the whole show, but those two things do happen.
Yeah. There's I've been waiting for that confrontation between Walt and Hank since between season 1 and 2. And I had...
They tease it all the time.
Well, yeah. They teased it beyond that because not a lot of people have watched the webisodes. They put up webisodes between seasons. They'll put up like three or four. They'll put some deleted scenes and some making of stuff on the AMC site, but also a couple webisodes that are like sometimes they're in the current season or the season that just finished, like, you know, between two things you know happened of like, oh, I wonder what happened there. And then they make a webisode of it. And they're, you know, they're not color corrected. The sound isn't great. They're done quick and dirty. They don't edit them very well, but they're kind of interesting. And there was one that was obviously like in the future at some point, and it was it was like from the eye, the point of view, the viewpoint of someone who's been kidnapped. Like, actually, they kind of showed it later when Walt is taken out to the desert by Chicken Man, and Chicken Man threatens to kill his whole Walt's whole family. You know, he's got a bag over his head, you know, like a sack tied over his head, and then he doesn't know where he's going. Well, there's a scene in a webisode between season one and two, or maybe two and three, where, you know, you are the person with the bag over your head, and somebody pulls it off, and the room's really bright, and then it kind of, you know, your vision narrows, and you can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's Walt holding a gun to your head and saying, like, you know, I will kill you and everyone you hold dear before I will let you hurt my family by doing anything about this. And that's the end of it. And you're like, who could that possibly be? And it's got to be Hank, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Such a great show, man.
Yeah.
I just can't wrap my head around it. Okay, maybe it's lame to sit here and talk about a show for half an hour, but
we're being fanboys.
Whatever.
Man.
It's our Wednesday show. We can do that.
It's our 250th episode. I said while you were setting up and you know, killing time, I was like, you know, if you don't like it, we'll give you your money back. And I'm not saying that's it. That's not for anyone who's ever
unless you donated.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, yeah. Yes, because we have to muzzle not the ox who treads the corn.
Right. Well, okay, so Walt must kill Hank, right? Because at the beginning, the first episode of season five, the beginning is him, you know, and he's got the full beard instead of the goatee, and he's grown a little bit of hair back, and he's, like, got the trunk with the rifle in it, and he's obviously going somewhere to run away. And then in the first of the second half of season five, it's also him looking the same way, and he goes back to his you know, suburban home, and it's abandoned, and there's kids skating in the pool, and that the neighbor lady drops her grocery bag. She's like freaked out by, well, like, she's seen a ghost.
Okay.
So does he like,
where, when in the timeline are you assuming those two things happened?
I think they, well, obviously after anything we've seen so far, because the home is abandoned.
Yeah. But I don't get the feeling, at the end of the last one where he is buying the M50 and putting and he gets it in a car, like the car comes with it. He goes out and just beeps and finds the car and has New Hampshire license plates. And that episode is called Live Free or Die. And I don't get the impression he's leaving town. I get the impression he's just come back to town.
Did he pledge free state? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to where I could sell meth all I want.
I don't think there'd be much of a market among the free staters for his product. And he couldn't pledge free state because he violates the non-aggression principle more before breakfast than, you know, I do all year. Or all lifetime.
Yes, he's very good at convincing people that things are going to change, and that it's okay, and it was just a temporary violation, a means
temporary
to an end. He's very
setbacks.
Good at that.
Yeah.
Yes.
No.
I don't know if Ian would buy it or if any other free staters would buy it.
But. Ian's really good at sussing out sociopaths. I think he would. And not, you probably. Know, Ian is not the king of free state project. He is
this is my free state. I am the king.
he is the public face to a lot of people, but there are people in the free state project who, you know, are like, I don't agree with what he does, or I don't like his activism or whatever.
There's probably people that are like, fuck Ian.
You know, it's kind of like if you own the printing press, you know, press is only free if you own one, and you know, if you own the nationally syndicated radio show with 110 affiliates and XM Radio, a lot of people in this country are going to think you are the voice of the Free State Project. And he's constantly, you know, almost every episode with, you know, any caller who complains about their area.
His solution is move to New Hampshire.
Whereas,
worked
you know,
for me.
Whereas I live in Wyoming, which has a Free State Project, and I tell callers, don't move here. Wyoming's full.
Leave me alone.
Leave me alone. Yeah. Yes.
My communications are one-way communications.
Mm-hmm.
That's Michael.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, so what do you think the significance of him putting the giant gun? What is it? What was it called? An M50?
Yeah, it's also known as the gun of Rambo. It's a 308 belt-fed machine gun.
I see.
Yeah, it's called the gun of Rambo because in the movie Lord of War, that Nicolas Cage playing the international arms dealer guy who's based on some real guy. You know, there's a scene where he's talking to some African warlord, despot, president of some country that doesn't really exist. You know, the People's Benevolent Republic of we'll cut off your head if you don't give us your daughter.
Right.
You know, he's one of the best customers of Nicolas Cage's character in there. And he says, you know, at one point he's like, Can you get me the gun of Rambo? And he says, Rambo 1, 2, or 3. and you know, they finally decide that what he means is an M50 machine gun.
Because
there's a scene in Rambo where Rambo is like, I mean, that's a tripod.
That's the iconic scene, isn't it?
But he's holding it like, you know, at his waist.
One arm. Yeah. Like he's point shooting it like Ronald Reagan does in that picture with the little Asian kid next to him.
Which, you know, most human males couldn't do that. I don't even know if Rambo could do that. But,
I don't know. Sly Stallone's a pretty stout dude.
He also doesn't want us to have guns, but he has a gun permit.
Oh, is he a gun grabber?
Yeah.
Really? Rambo's a gun grabber.
He's a gun grabber with a gun permit.
What is the damn world coming to?
He's a gun grabber with a gun concealed carry permit.
Well, aren't they all? I mean, in a way, if they don't have their own permit, then their bodyguard does.
Yeah.
Or they keep somebody around them, or they know somebody who can make things done, or they have cops that follow them around and keep them safe. Cops with guns. All right. So anyway, what's the significance, you think? You don't think that Walt kills Hank or maybe even his whole family in some kind of crazy murder-suicide attempt, but then Walt's too much of a selfish guy to pull the trigger on his own head?
I kind of think he doesn't kill Hank, but I could be wrong. I didn't think he'd kill Mike, although you kind of knew he was going to kill Mike. But
that blew me away, man. I thought, man, that's – I think that was the moment when I lost any kind of sympathy for Walt at all. Was just out of anger. Like, there was no reason for it. He didn't think of it in his head and think, oh, I got to kill Mike. He just got mad and went over there with the revolver and pulled the trigger, man.
Correction. That's an M60, not an M50.
M60.
You were heavy machine gun.
M60. Yeah. All right.
It was a big one in the Vietnam War. You know, it was what they sat up in helicopters with and just rained down hellfire on farmers and just decimated, you know, cities, towns.
Right.
Yeah.
But much less hellfire than the hellfire that drones rain down on people now.
I think it's what the guy is shooting in Full Metal Jacket from the helicopter when he says, get some, get some, get some, get some.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's the ironic
thing. 7.62 by 51 is the caliber.
Yeah, that's 308, more or less. I mean they're interchangeable in one direction. I forget what it is. NATO rounds work in a 308. 308 don't work in NATO. Maybe I don't know. I don't fucking know. I know my bullets work in my gun.
Yeah.
Design flaws. There are design flaws of that gun. So here's what I think.
This would be a gun, though. What do you think?
As opposed to a rifle?
Well, Yeah, people are always like, there's guns. Like, to bring it back to Breaking Bad, when Mike is telling the lady from Madrigal,
she said,
I will pull out my pistol and I will shoot you in the head. And she goes, you're going to pull out your gun and shoot me? He goes, it's not a gun. It's a pistol. And
Mike
where
is,
will I
do? Mike is just trying to get her to be specific in the call that she makes. He's trying to, he's checking her for details. I don't think Mike would correct Walt if he called a pistol a gun, you know. No, what you're talking about, you know, in the military when they say you call a rifle, a gun is something else. No, this isn't even a gun. This is a full auto heavy rifle, machine gun. In the sense of it's not a rifle, it's a gun. A gun is like a something that fires mortars. You know, that's got a barrel that's like 25
like on a
feet
battleship.
Long that you could crawl inside the barrel of. Okay. Yeah.
But a machine gun can still be called a machine gun, like this is.
Yeah.
This is fully automatic. They call it a machine gun, not a machine rifle.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I guess we're
FAL stands for light. The Belgian that they were at FAL stands for, I think, means light automatic rifle.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So,
anyway,
to answer your question, see, on the fiends, we do bring it back. Those two scenes, the one where at the beginning of the last episode of part A of season 5 and the one at the beginning of part B of season 5 being Walt buying the rifle, the machine gun, and then this time Walt going to his house and seeing that, you know, it's a squatter's paradise now, and the word Heisenberg has been spray painted in the living room and it's been untouched for a year. And it looks like someone has tried to dig up the boards in the floor with pickaxes and saws. I think that those two things happen very late in this season. There's seven episodes left after the one that just played. I think those two things happen within minutes of each other. I think he buys the gun, gets in his car, and drives that car to his old house.
Right. But why is it his old house? I mean, what happened to where nobody lives there anymore? It's completely abandoned, and the neighbor is so scared by his presence that she drops all of her groceries on the ground.
He's had to leave town because the DEA is going to put him in prison. You know, originally, at the end of the last season, I was thinking it's the cartel. That's why he's buying the machine gun. Or I had a theory that I floated on here that I really think is not true now, is that Mike didn't die. I thought, you know, he shot Mike. Mike's at the Rio Grande. Mike had his cell phone on him. Mike knows a doctor 8 miles away in Mexico that patched him up once before. He could probably call that guy and say, send your guys over here immediately and fix me up. That was my theory.
Yeah.
But I don't think that happened, and I think he really did die. And in this episode, you know, Jesse says, did Mike get out? Is Mike okay? And, you know, Walt says, yeah, Jesse's gone, which basically means he's dead.
Yeah.
Or it could mean
Walt
I think
lies.
He's dead. And, you know, but the thing is, they bring Walt drives back with his car with a body in the trunk. They never show the face, which is why I was thinking maybe it's not Mike. And then he and his new, younger, dumber Jesse, the guy that shot the kid, he and Walt dissolve the body in the trunk in acid.
Right.
Yeah. But so I think Mike's dead. But yeah, I was thinking at the end of the last part of, you know, the one before the break, I was thinking that thing at the beginning, he was buying the machine gun to deal with the cartels. And now I think, what cartel? There's no cartel after him, I think. But who knows? Because Lydia's trying to push him to get back into the game now. Maybe he does. Because right now she's buying. We don't know who she's buying from, but and she's getting like
65%
and dropping.
Yeah.
I'm assuming she's buying it from the guy that Walt met with and said to him, say my name. You know?
Or what about the young kid? What about the kid who shot the kid?
He's still
the blonde guy.
I think he's, maybe. I don't know. Nah, I don't see him as being able to do the chemistry and do the business well enough to do that.
Yeah.
Because he was saying, like, you know, I could help you after a bunch more cooks, but, and they did a bunch more cooks, but I don't see him as bright, even as bright as Jesse. You know, Jesse was able to pull off a cook in Mexico without Walt, but I don't think that this kid could. Todd is his name.
Right. Yeah, and people were really skeptical of if Jesse could achieve the cook in Mexico. And in Mexico, he had to support staff, people helping him out.
Yep.
Whereas the – is his name Todd?
Yeah.
The blonde kid?
Yeah.
Okay. Todd would probably wouldn't have that.
He was in that football movie, Friday Night Lights. He was one of the jocks. Remember, one of the football stars?
Oh. No, I don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess most of the characters – I don't remember any characters from Friday Night Lights. They were forgettable for me, I guess.
Because you were picturing yourself as all of them because you were a football player back then.
I don't know if I was back then. I think I was already graduated.
Team Vidotti. Well, let's go to the market and we'll come back and be fanboys for another half hour.
Okay.
Worms.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's BADQUAKER.com.
It's 12 seconds. It's pointless to play it as a clip. I'm not gonna play it off the beginning. We're gonna explain it first.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not gonna. Or are we rolling?
I was just gonna say we're rolling, and you've already told me for more than 12 seconds why you're not gonna waste 12 seconds to play this clip. If you want to just play this clip.
All right. It's stupid to play it at the top, but
what's
okay.
It from?
What the hell is going on? Stop a loving Canadian lad.
Who's that?
That's Scott. He's a dick.
He's a dick. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the YAD principle, or the you're a dick principle, which is kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing that Stefan Molyneux talked about a few of his episodes ago. And I thought that's a good way, a good funny way, and apparently a good Canadian way, at least according to the South Park makers, of putting it. And we've talked about this before, that the non-aggression principle isn't the only thing that matters to – it shouldn't be the only thing that matters to anybody.
We did a whole episode of it, and that's probably where Stefan Molyneux got the idea.
I don't know about that.
We are to him, I think, what Alex Jones is to the mainstream media. We're just source material for him.
I can only hope. But
I'm kidding.
It's poppy. It's so poppy to say the you're a dick. And he explains a few good examples of that. Like if you know, you were stranded in a desert. I think this is one of his examples. Say you were walking through the desert, you ran out of water, you're about to die of dehydration, and somebody comes along and has been planning this for a while or has been keeping track of you, and he's like, yeah, I'll give you this you know, big quart of water here if you sign this contract saying that you're going to pay me $1 million as soon as you get back to civilization. You know, and then you get back to civilization, I don't think anybody would really help that contract to be enforced. You know, they would look at the guy who did it and say, well, you're a dick. You know, it wouldn't be, oh, well, you signed the contract. You know, you signed the contract under duress. And it might not be non-aggression principle compliant, but it's you're a dick compliant.
I think that most people would probably be willing to just punch the guy and drink some of the water to keep from dying.
And do you think most people would feel okay if you heard that story? Would you feel like the guy who punched the guy with the $1 million bottle of water, would you feel like he was a bad guy or he broke the non-aggression principle? Maybe, but he wasn't breaking the you're a dick principle.
Yeah, and I mean, there's matters of degrees with this. Like, I don't think someone's a dick if they – you know, like, let's say there's a natural disaster somewhere and they load up their car with supplies and drive 400 miles and go sell it at an inflated price that is not $500 for a cup of water, but is, you know, let's say $5 for a bottle of water. I think that's the free market.
Yeah, that's not a dick. I think those things that people would tend to call price gouging, stuff like that, that's just making a product available because nobody else wants to go.
Yeah.
So the price of going there to provide those things is going to be higher. So you're going to be able to charge a premium for it. And I'd rather, you know, when I was driving from Casper to Riverton, one of the first, I think it was the first time when I was first in Wyoming, I went to the main station in Casper, met everybody, stayed on set. I think I did one package in house and tossed it in the studio. And then they were like, okay, now go to Riverton and be your own guy, you know, be the bureau chief. And, on my way, I left with only a quarter tank of gas. And I didn't realize that they're in Wyoming. You can drive from Casper to Riverton, and it's 2 hours, and you will not see civilization. You barely see civilization. And I found a gas station about halfway, and I was so worried to death I was going to run out of gas completely and be stranded in the middle of Wyoming in December. And I was so glad when I saw a gas station there, and I did not mind at all that I had to pay $6 a gallon or whatever it was, twice the price of normal gas. I was thankful to pay
twice
the price.
And that's the last time you had to do that in Wyoming because you learned your lesson, and it didn't cost you much. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, we did an episode June 28th called Beyond the Non-Aggression Principle, where we didn't take it in this direction. We kind of took it in the other direction of that the non-aggression principle. We're kind of taking it in and that right now. I think we're kind of taking it. You and I are taking it, or at least I want to take it to basically times you could probably violate the non-aggression principle and still live with yourself, which sounds shocking, and I'm sure people are going to unsubscribe now. But I think that Stefan Molyneux with the don't be a dick principle was saying very clearly and in a much more clever way what we were saying in the beyond the non-aggression principle one, which is
right.
That the non-aggression principle must be absolutely adhered to, but you could still be an unpleasant person even if you totally adhere to the non-aggression principle.
Exactly. And the fact that just because you would be allowed to use your weapon in self-defense in certain situations, you might be a dick to do so. Like the story of me and my wife crossing the rancher's land when we were hiking in the hill country. He would be a dick to shoot a pregnant woman that was just trying to get, you know, to her car before it was dark and the coyotes came out.
I also think that'd be violating the non-aggression principle because – you know, two people who are not armed or you can't – they're not carrying rifles. They're not carrying something you can shoot someone at a distance with. You know, you can see that from a distance. Walking across your land is not a threat to you
that you could
legally or ethically use anything near lethal force.
Well, and it violates some of the rules of gun safety, i.e. know your target.
Yeah.
If he doesn't know what we are, he's not knowing his target. But even other examples, like I think what got us on the subject was Ian's experience in the Keene Activity Center, which, I mean, isn't that Ian's home? Mm-hmm. Of the dude who trashed his place and was just sitting in his underwear on Ian's couch in the morning when Ian woke up.
Yeah, and it kind of shocked us because me, for sure, and I think probably you also – would have probably had a weapon and been screaming at the person, what the fuck are you doing in my house?
Yeah. See, I was I was unsure of whether or not I'd admit to that or think that that happened. But the other night when we moved into our new place and I heard a bang, bang, and I did grab the shotgun and I go and I just start yelling, who the F is there? You know, who the fuck is there? And so if I did wake up to some strange person in my house, there would probably be a weapon in my arm and I would be screaming.
We'll see.
I don't think I'd be pointing it at the guy, but
I wouldn't either. And I called in Free Talk Live and I said all of that and that I would not be pointing it at him. I'd be pointing it down with two hands on it, screaming, who the fuck you and what? Let me see your hands. I would basically be acting like a cop, or at least like a cop is trained. You know, a lot of cops act far worse than far beyond that. But in training, that's what they would tell a cop to do, you know, if someone came into an area where they shouldn't be. What was the banging at your house?
I didn't figure it out that night, but I think I figured it out now. Our dog is in a giant bear cage when we're not home. We had a bear cage commissioned for him, basically. It's steel that's been welded together by my one of my cousins, or one of my wife's cousins, who's into that kind of stuff. And and we had put it upside down. So I think it was the lock falling out of place and banging. And it's such a big metal cage, and it was in an empty room with bare walls and stone floors. So I think it made a really loud sound.
I like your family. You're like, they're like, oh, you want me to build for you a cage that you could put a put a human in and they'd never get out of? Of course.
Well, it was the redneck side of the family, actually. It was my wife's family. So
you want us to build you a man cage? Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Banjo music playing in the background.
Exactly. Nice. Now, you know, what I was going to guess that it was, because I've moved into a few places where I think that they were suddenly vacant because someone used to deal drugs there. Because I've moved into more than one place, not where I live now, but rental places, where, like, for the first couple weeks I'm there, occasionally someone knocks on the door late at night and is like, hey, is Bill here? You know,
right?
Or calls on the phone, or both. You know, looking for the guy that got run out of there.
So, I don't think it was anything like that. I think it was just some banging from our cage. But anyway, back to the a dick principle.
Yeah. Which way do you want to take this? Do you want to take it both ways? I mean, because
let's explore both ways.
All right,
shouldn't we?
You swing both ways.
I said let's explore both the ways.
I said you swing both ways.
Didn't say that.
Okay. Well, I mean, really, I don't have a lot to say about Stefan's thing other than we said it first and he said it better.
There you go. Yes.
I mean, I'll put that into our vernacular, the DBD, don't be a dick principle. Absolutely.
You're a dick. That's Scott. Scott's a dick.
You know,
it was sold so well because he's Canadian, and I almost heard, like, I felt like Stefan's face was flapping up and down, like his top part of his head wasn't attached to the lower part, like he was a South Park character, like he's Terrence and Phillip.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is much more interesting, and I've actually really never heard it addressed on any libertarian show before, is basically when can you violate the non-aggression principle?
Hmm. Okay. Explain.
Well, I'm just going to quote Ben Stone. And
was this on the record when you were having this conversation?
No.
Is he going to be okay?
Oh, I should call him. No? Here, you talk for a minute. I'm going to call Ben.
Go ahead.
I know exactly what Michael's going to say. Michael has been running into some difficulties lately, and so he's been asking people for advice.
No, I'm not. No, I don't want to talk about that. I want to keep this theoretical.
Okay. Michael has been considering difficulties that are theoretical lately.
Yeah.
He has been asking people about these
through
thought experiments. And so I guess he's going to try to get a hold of some exact source material here.
Well, it was a private phone conversation we had, but I have to run it by Ben first to see if it's okay.
Because you don't want to violate the YAD principle, huh? You wouldn't be violating the non-aggression
principle.
Now,
what does YAD stand for?
You're a dick.
I think it should be the DBD principle. It rolls off the tongue better, and it stands for "Don't be a dick."
DBD
instead of "You're a dick." Yeah, because it fits better with non-aggression principle. Because if it followed the way it's the "You're a dick" principle,
the syntax
it would
of
be
it, yeah.
Yeah, it would be the I called you by mistake. No wonder Ben
you
didn't pick up. Did you hear the phone ringing?
Well, it was on vibrate, so I did feel it.
You just felt really good while I was for that
I
last.
I felt you calling out to me.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to try to call the real Ben Stone?
Yeah.
Would he please stand up?
I dialed the wrong number again. I'm going to call the real number here.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess in my initial thought on when to violate or if it's okay to violate the non-aggression principle is no matter what, it's still a violation. It's if you're willing to violate it to get what you want. And in the end, people will judge you based on I guess that's part of the thing is it's discovering the law, discovering how much somebody's property was aggressed upon, what it's worth to them. To a reasonable person. I mean, that was sort of the essence of what law should be rather than man making laws and deciding that this is something we will enforce, this is something we will throw you in a cage for. Instead, it's realizing how big of an aggression something was. One of the other examples Molyneux gives is so if you start to – like say you're me, right? And you're up on a telephone pole or you got a 28-foot ladder up on a building and you're trying to get into a cable box, you know, like the outside pedestal box, and you're looking at – and you fall. But you're hanging because you're strapped it onto something. You know, you got your little safety belt on. And right in front of you is a window. And you have to make a judgment call for your safety. Do you break the window and go into that apartment or that building or that house for your own safety to save your life if that's the case? Or do you say, no, I don't really want to violate their property. I don't want to violate the non-aggression principle there. You might decide and make the judgment call to violate it because your life is worth it to you. And you think that the owner of the window or the apartment or the building will understand and you will pay them back later. I think Kai explained something like this, although Ben would probably say it wasn't a violation of the non-aggression principle because it was government property. But she explains how when she was hiking the Appalachian Trail, she got stuck in a blizzard and broke her way into a ranger station to use the telephone. I think Ben would say that's not a violation of the non-aggression principle in the first place because it's a government ranger station. But if you assumed it was some other place that she broke into to save her own life.
Cops and firemen certainly think they're in the right and they are within the law to violate the Bill of Rights under what is called legally exigent circumstances. Basically, you know, if you hear somebody crying for help or being raped or you look through the window and someone's about to stab somebody, pretty much anybody can generally kick in the door and stop it from happening. And no court in their right mind, if that's a thing anymore, is going to charge the person for the door or, you know, arrest them for trespassing.
Right. And I think part of law should be to figure out how egregious of a rupture of the non-aggression principle some action was. If the non-aggression principle is broken, if you aggress on somebody and it's very minor, then maybe, yeah, there shouldn't be any punishment or there doesn't need to be some kind of major justice or restorative justice served. You know, I don't think it's like some legal positivists say, well, you break the law, you break the law. You know, you texting while driving is just as bad as somebody breaking into and robbing a bank. I don't think we should treat the non-aggression principle like a legal positivist would treat government law.
Yeah, but a lot of the things you're talking about the gray areas of it depends how bad something is, kind of venture into in a moment of need, a lot of people will throw that all out the window, you know. And I mean, this is even addressed in Jewish law and in going back a long way of, you know, moral questions of if a man steals a loaf of bread to feed his starving children, you know, what is the punishment? Things like that. And, you know, if you're in an emergency situation, your threshold of what is a big violation is going to be a lot different than if you're just sitting around with a full tummy and everything's good, you know?
Yep. I mean, even Muslims can eat pork if they're stranded on an island and that's the only game on the island.
Yes.
I think that's explicitly stated. I've heard that from somebody who was a Muslim who was a college professor. I don't know if it's true. I can't quote a surah for you. Maybe we should ask Will Coley. But that's
let's call
the same
him.
Concept. The concept is there. Yeah. What did Ben say?
Ben talked about, here's what it was okay, the other day when we had Amanda Billy Rock on, I opened with a really tough question, and I kind of feel like, you know, she's cool, and I don't know if she did any of the research I asked her to do, which was basically listen to some fiends. I think she was like, I don't know what the fiends are, but, you know, okay, I'll do an interview, sure. But most people who've been interviewed on The Fiends have either heard The Fiends or kind of jive with us, you know, like basically we don't do an interview. We have someone on as a third fiend for a day. And I don't think she knew what she was in for. And I asked her to listen to some episodes. I don't know if she did it. I don't think she did it. And I also asked, you know, because like I asked her stuff that I think kind of made her blush or kind of made her feel like, that's none of your business. Who are you? You know, like when I was like asking about dating Adam Kokesh and asking like, so do chicks think Ron Paul's hot and want to bang him? You know, I think she was kind of like, What is this? And I said like, yeah, Ron Paul, he's 108. And she's like, well, no, he's 77. She didn't get the themes, you know, she didn't. She's great when she's up speaking by herself, and she's good on a lot of interviews, but she did fine, but it was kind of, there were some awkward moments between all three of us where we didn't know which way to go with it. And, you know, and one of the first things, like right off the top, I asked her an incredibly tough theoretical libertarian question that, you know, I think Stefan Molyneux could answer, and I think Ben Stone could answer it a different way. I don't even know if I could answer it, but I just wanted to throw her a tough one right at the top. And she kind of started to answer, but kind of didn't have an answer for it. And then there was some dead space, and then you jumped in so there wouldn't be dead air and answered it your way. But I still really, it's still kind of my biggest question is, what would happen in LibPair if all security and justice was privatized? You know, you hired your own private security and court systems. And what about the person?
Let's use the word voluntary, because privatized is so.
Okay, yeah, because privatized usually means the government sells something to their buddies.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So private security firms, voluntary security firms. You know, my question has always been, and don't rush in and answer this. Let me say what the question is, because I know you're going to – I can feel you wanting to jump in.
You can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel it boiling up.
It's always been kind of the biggest who will build the roads question for me. You know, like who will build the roads? Everybody who's got anything beyond first day libertarianism can usually answer that one by now. But the one I never really hear a good answer for is, in LibPair, what would you do with the person who aggresses on others – and, you know, the victim's private security firm goes over to his house and says, we need to have you come with us where you've been accused and we're going to convene a private court. And the guy says, fuck you, get off my property, and points an AK-47 at them. Now, Boston Tea Party, who I really look up to as a great libertarian thinker, I don't want to say a great man, but he has better, more detailed answers on almost every question I've ever heard in Liberty. Yet he says he's not a full-on anarchist. He says, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, but I'm kind of an ultra-minarchist. And the reason is because I don't know what would happen when that happened. And we've been trying to get him on here to answer that question of how would that work. And we can't find him. He's disappeared, or he doesn't answer our emails, or something. Free State Wyoming Forum is back up, by the way. It was down for a while, but it's back up.
Yeah.
Which is good news for Hesperus, because Hesperus has been going, the sky is falling, some libertarian sites disappeared. And there's actually explanations for all of them.
Yes. And the fiends are drone proof, so don't worry about it with us.
Yeah. If we disappear, it doesn't go anywhere. Nothing
we'll
happens.
Still be here.
Yeah. So I asked that question, and I asked, you know, she didn't answer it, and you kind of jumped in with something. And, you know, the usual thing, like the Scott Beezer, L. Neil Smith answer is, well, those people would be ostracized and no one would deal with them. And that makes a lot of sense, but I think there's other people that would deal with them. I don't think they'd be completely, you know, on a rock in modern society in that situation.
Sure, because there would be a market need. There would be a business entrepreneur who figured out, hey, I can sell goods to these people that nobody else would sell goods to.
It'd be like,
so I think that there is something to be said for that.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, the whorehouses and liquor houses on Hell on Wheels. But here's what Ben's answer was. Ben pointed me at early Irish law, sometimes called Brehon law. I don't even know how to say this. Brehon law, which governed everyday life in early medieval Ireland. It was basically, you know, there were different clans and they each kind of had their own wise man or person who that clan would go to answer questions of justice.
Yeah, and I think Murray Rothbard wrote a whole thing about this, and I think Ben read it on his cast once.
Yeah, and I said, well, what would happen, you know, if there was something between someone from one clan and something from another clan, and they both refused, or one party refused to go through this chosen justice system, this kind of, you know, thing that is kind of private. It was private. It was a social contract in a way, but it was voluntary in that you could leave and go to another clan and have a different, you know, leader or a group of whatever. Uh-huh. So, you know, my question was, well, I don't know if that's really libpair, but in that society, what would happen if somebody aggressed on somebody and refused to be judged in that private court? And his answer was basically, they become outlaws, and the word outlaw has a different term there than it does now, like with outlaw bikers who have a very strong code of ethics. He meant like extra legal, like outside the law. The law doesn't apply to you anymore. And under early Irish law in that situation, anybody could basically rob that person and kill them. And well, I was like,
oh, that, there you go.
Yeah. And that's the answer. But does that violate the non-aggression principle? Probably.
I don't know if it does, because I've also heard it said that when you aggress upon somebody, like if you murder somebody, you have given up your right to not be murdered because you have decided that I don't abide by that principle. I don't hold myself to that moral standard. So why should other people use that moral standard around me? Because obviously, if I'm a murderer, I disagree with that moral standard. So if you as a sentient being eschew any thought to the non-aggression principle or the golden rule or treating people reasonably, then you're basically telling the whole world you don't subscribe to any of that anyway. So why should they prevent themselves from aggressing upon you?
That sounds like Old Testament or old Islamic law, is it?
I don't know. I think I got it from Mike Rozif, Lou Rockwell blogger. I'm not sure, but that's where I think I first heard that concept.
Hmm. I mean, I would say that the founding fathers who fought the revolution thought that way. And it wasn't even murder. Yeah. It was like, if you steal from us, we can kill you.
Well, I mean, I thought that's why there's the concept of an eye for an eye, because it was the concept that retribution or justice should be, you know, it should be on the same level. It shouldn't be an eye for a leg, an eye for a brain, or an eye for murder. You know, it should be proportionate is what I think that concept came from.
I don't want to do nothing violent. I just want to be left alone, man. And fortunately, I haven't had it tested to where, you know, I've been violated like that.
Yeah. The other thing, I guess that's my point is, okay, so you can't solve that problem. Does that one little problem that might happen occasionally and probably would happen occasionally, does preventing that from happening justify murders on the hundreds of millions that we get from having a state?
I don't know.
I don't think it does at all. No, I don't think anything small like
it doesn't.
That.
I'm sorry. I was picking out headphone replacement pads for you.
Okay, fair enough. But that's the other thing is, you can come up with a million different scenarios or something where it's hard to find a good answer for how libpair would work, where it's hard to find a good answer. And you think, well, that's what a state's for, you know. But – and Molyneux addresses this too really well. I think he calls it – it's the same as the god of the gaps, right? It's the same as somebody saying, well, I don't know why there are stars in the sky. It must be because there's God. And I think statists use the same thing. They say, well, you don't know how this would work in libpair, so that's why we need the state. They insert the state into that.
Yeah, it's so square, man.
It is square. But yeah, so those are my thoughts on your who would build the roads question and on the DB, ADB. Wait.
It's just DBD, man. Don't be a dick.
DBD.
Okay. You don't need to use the A in an acronym. DBD. No, let's see. Let's make sure DVD doesn't mean something horrible. Let me look it up.
Okay.
And then I think we're pretty close to our time here, unless you got more.
DVD. Diebold Incorporated.
Is it?
That's funny. Yeah. That's the company that makes the voting machines, right?
Yep. Don't be a voting. Yeah. There you go. There was also a hardcore punk band from Boston called Death Before Dishonor, DVD.
Okay.
All right, I'm done, unless you got more, man. You got more?
Don't be a dick.
Yeah, I don't think we came, I don't think we really came to a conclusion on the, you know, I would have had an answer, but I don't really want to. I feel like I kind of half answered it and left it sounding like I think it's okay to kill people and take their things, which I don't. And I think we need to come back to this at some point. I think we brought out a historical example of where it where someone had a solution for this, you know, with private
justice. Maybe it's a 70s movie and it's up to the listener to figure it out and then tell us.
Yeah. All right. I will link Brohen Law, and people can do our research for us and let us know, because it's episode 250. Man, we're kind of just having fun today.
Yep. Worms and peas.
Yep.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.